Life Fact continues on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Audrey Nowakowski.
And I'm Bonnie North. The transgender community has become a lot more visible recently. Caitlyn Jenner's transition was quite public. Laverne Cox has a prominent role in Orange is the New Black. And Jeffrey Tambor took home an Emmy for his work in the original Amazon series Transparent.
However, transgender youth have not been in the media spotlight. This is true in Wisconsin school districts as well. There currently are no numbers for how many transgender students are in the state because there is no official way of collecting this data.
It's known that since 2013, at least four transgender people have killed themselves in Wisconsin, two of them from the same high school. However, freelance writer Zach Brook found some unlikely places with pockets of support for transgender youth.
He wrote about transgender bullying in the latest issue of Milwaukee Magazine, and I asked Brooke what inspired him to write about the topic and how Wisconsin schools have set good or bad examples in how they accommodate transgender youth.
Well, I think that it's a mixed bag, to be honest. As for what inspired me personally, you look at what happened in Racine, and it just seemed so unusual. I don't have numbers. There are no numbers for how many transgender students there are in the state. But when you look at one high school with two transgender students who both killed themselves, that seems to be a bit unusual. And so that was worth looking into. At the same time, I wanted to look at how the state was handling transgender students overall. What I discovered was it was a district-by-district basis. And so that led me to report on some things Racine was doing, some things that other districts were doing. And that's how I came to do that.
And you mentioned that there are no numbers. So what has been happening currently that we're getting some of this information that you used in your article?
Well, the way that the state assesses the number of LGBT students, the Wisconsin Youth Risk Behavior Assessment has been the traditional metric. That is something that is administered every 2 years, and they recently included a question that pertains to gay and lesbian students. They ask, are you gay or lesbian? And they can then weigh that data and approximate the total number of gay and lesbian students throughout the state. There is no question on that assessment for transgender students, so there really is no way to know that. In 2012, Dane County released their own assessment, which asked questions related to gender identity for the first time. So Dane County was able to approximate a trans population as a percentage of their overall student body, but there is no statewide thing. I did come across two UW researchers, Maurice Gaddis and Sarah McKinnon, who have conducted their own research on transgender students within Wisconsin. But as part of their research, they weren't trying to approximate a total number in Wisconsin. They just wanted to get a look at how transgender students navigate schools on a day-to-day basis.
With these new numbers, it's because people are taking their own initiative. And as you mentioned, it's not a statewide mandate quite yet.
No, absolutely not.
So one of the people that you highlight in your article is Cameron Langrell. What is his story?
Cameron Langrell was a student at Horlick High School in Racine. He was a freshman, but he was definitely LGBT, likely transgender. He, before his death in April, changed his Facebook status to female. The reason I call him he, pronouns are especially important in the trans community. And in most cases, if Cameron self-identified as she, I would identify Cameron as she. But according to Cameron's mother, Jamie Olander, Cameron has never asked to be called anything other than he, so that's what I'm going to go with. Anyways, April 30th, just before the end of his freshman year, Cameron hung himself in his mother's basement.
And was this because of bullying that was inflicted upon him at school, or just the struggles of going through a change in identity?
With so many of these things, it's hard to pinpoint an exact cause. That being said, Cameron's mother, Jamie, really believes that bullying contributed to his death. He was actually suspended from school at the time, and the last day he spent at school was Tuesday. He killed himself on a Thursday. The last day he spent at school, he ended up being bullied for kissing a boy in public, according to text messages that she has. Racine, it should be noted, said they have no records of Cameron being bullied, and I don't think they deny it happens, but their position is, unless it's reported, we can't do anything about it.
And what is Racine School District policy right now, either towards bullying in general, but more specifically toward transgendered students?
Racine does not have a trans-specific policy at the moment. In my research, there is no overarching state mandate that says you have to accommodate trans students the way that there's a statute at the state level, the Wisconsin pupil non-discrimination statute, and that protects against things like sex and religion and race, and it also protects against sexual orientation. However, it does not protect against gender identity. So gender identity protections either exist or don't exist at the local level. And Racine doesn't have anything specific to transgender students.
So since the death of two students at the same school in Racine, how has the school itself or the district reflected upon either their school environment or their policies? Have they started to be more proactive about looking into this and changing?
I can't really point to a specific policy change that Racine has enacted since the deaths of the two students. However, I can say that it does seem that it's taken a big toll on the staff at Horlick, definitely on the administration. This is something they're not taking lightly, and they are exploring options for change. I do believe in the past, there was the middle schools had bullying slips that students could fill out just to report a bullying incident. Also, the parents and teachers were allowed to fill out those slips as well. I'm not sure what happens once they get reported, but Racine said they are expanding those to high schools now, not just middle schools, but they'll be available in high schools. So that's one thing that is different this year that wasn't in place last year. But as far as changes to accommodate LGBT students, I'm not really sure. I do know that they do have a grant in place, a Safe Schools grant, which requires them to take steps to address sexual minority youth, and that they are in like year two of that grant. And so they will enact protection throughout the life of that grant. But that's where they are.
Okay. And I'm going to quote one piece of your article, and it reads, "At its heart, sexual orientation requires no one else's consent, but gender expression seemingly requires everyone's." Now, this struck me as a really simple but profound statement because, especially today in the media, people such as Caitlyn Jenner or Laverne Cox, they're just more so in the media, trans people are getting more visibility. But on a higher level, these are all adults, and it's not necessarily trans youth, and people are advocating for the youth. But here, you're really going into Wisconsin school environment specifically. So why do you think this statement is true? Is it, in your opinion, because transgender issues involve everyone's public space and how we occupy it compared to sexual orientation being a more personal issue?
You know, I absolutely think that's why that is. For gays and lesbians, who certainly have made great strides over the past decade, there is a way to closet yourself. I'm not saying they should do that by any means, but I'm saying it can be done. With transgender people, there's no way to do that without, posing as your biological sex. And, the second that you start presenting yourself as your gender identity or your gender expression that is not your biological sex, you run into all sorts of problems. And they start, just from being out on the street. They start from you can encounter the microaggressions. But it really, really ramps up a notch when you try to do certain things specific to gender, like use a restroom or use a locker room in high schools.
And how are lesbian, gay, and bisexual youth at an advantage in school environments and state education systems compared to transgender students?
Well, as I said before, they are counted on the Wisconsin Youth Risk Assessment, and that allows state officials to get a sense of how in danger these kids are when it comes to, self-harm and it comes to bullying and stuff like that. When state officials don't ask about transgender students, there's no way to assess their problems to try to help them. Schools are required to provide safe learning environments to all students, but with trans students, they can't really do that unless they define what problems trans students are facing.
So what is the academic concept of minority stress theory that contributes to more negative mental health outcomes in trans students?
Minority stress theory was posited by Elon Meyer, and it suggests that LGBT people have unique stressors independent of anything else going on in their lives, which contributes negatively to outcomes. And this just means that if somebody has, a health issue or a mental health issue or a bad home life or anything that would contribute negatively is apart from their sexual orientation or their gender identity. That is a unique stressor that's independent of anything else going on in that person's life. And the reason I wrote about that is interesting. When I was doing reporting on these students, I would hear off the record that maybe they were just crazy. They had mental health issues that the school couldn't address. And I thought it was important to include the minority stress theory to just show that, okay, no matter what issues a certain individual might have had, there was still issues related to their status as a gay person or a lesbian person or a transgender person, and that those issues could be addressed within a school setting. And it, in a sense, it was like passing the buck if that was what people were advocating, that why should we help them or they're beyond help. They still have a responsibility to help a certain subset of issues with everybody. And I believe that transgender status is one of those issues.
And you also cite in your article that 67 of the 426 school districts in Wisconsin have adopted policies protecting transgender students, but of the 67, only 3 have clear guidelines. So what are some key examples and districts in Wisconsin that have led the way in these guidelines?
I think Madison was the first, roughly 10 years ago, to add some language into their school district policies that accommodate transgender students. However, there was a gap, according to Brian Jukums, the director of GSAFE, a safe school advocacy group. There was a gap of about 10 years that before Madison actually really gave people directions on how to implement these policies. The real leader in this looks like it's Shorewood, who, when they enacted their transgender policy a couple years ago, they gave guidelines at the same time. They did a big promotional blitz to say this is what they're doing. And they lobbied the statewide school board association, which sets model policies, to develop a model policy for trans students. So they really pushed the ball forward on this one.
So what options do transgender youth have today to make their transition more accessible and a little easier as they're navigating school before they're 18 and they don't need their parents' consent?
Well, if we are talking medically, there have been many advances in helping trans youth at an early age. I think this story's been everywhere this summer. PBS Frontline covered it. Transgender youth can now take puberty blockers, which will delay the onset of puberty and the secondary sexual characteristics that come with that, to give themselves a little more time. This is maybe if they're not sure of their gender identity, they can definitely delay it and think about, well, you know, now I know, let's go through with it. They can also begin hormone treatment, which is just taking estrogen or testosterone and developing secondary sexual characteristics of their gender identity or of their gender expression. However, it should be said that, you know, these are new and expensive treatments, they're definitely not offered throughout the state, and that's where we are with that.
Okay. And throughout the course of researching for this article, you cite a few examples of transgender individuals, but was there something you found interesting or people you encountered that didn't make it into the final piece?
Sure. I was actually really limited by space. You begin a project like this and you're like, well, how am I ever going to, you know, fill my word count? But I talked to so many people that some had to be cut. And it's a tragedy because they were all great stories. In addition to Cameron Langrell, I talked to the family of Mindy Fabian, a trans student in Madison who killed herself in 2013. I also talked to the mother of Harris, a Milwaukee public school teacher. Now, this wasn't a teenager. She died over Thanksgiving last year. And in her suicide note, she actually called out colleagues that she said were bullying her at work. And it's not that it's understandable that youth bully youth, but it kind of is, actually. I mean, it's not that it's acceptable, but you get it. These are immature people. Teachers is just a whole other level. These are professionals that are like, you know, they're coworkers and they're adults and they're mature. And the fact that Karis killed herself based partly on workplace bullying was very striking to me. Finally, I also talked to Tina Owen, who is the head of the Alliance School here in Milwaukee, which accommodates all sorts of students, students from all walks of life, but definitely is heavy into accommodating LGBT students. And I just talked with her about some of the things schools can do to meet the needs of transgender students.
Well, you definitely exposed some great information, and we can see where we need to go, but also some of the positive things that have happened so far. So I'd like to thank you for coming in today, Zach.
Thanks for having me.
Zach Brook is a freelance writer who currently lives in Chicago. His article on transgender bullying in Wisconsin schools is called In a State of Transition. It's in the October issue of Milwaukee Magazine.